Good day and welcome to the Cigna Drug and Alcohol Education Series Conference. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn things over to Ms. Ann Sweeney-Levon. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Kelly. Good day and thank you for calling into Cigna's Drug and Alcohol Awareness Series. My name is Ann Sweeney-Levon and I'm a lead clinician for the outpatient team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you'll not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you'll be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. And after this survey, you'll be able to ask questions on today's seminar. Handouts for today are available on our website, www.cignabehavioral.com. When you get onto the website, if you go to the left-hand side, you can click on Visit Our Education and Resource page, and then click on Drug and Alcohol Awareness, then the Drug and Alcohol Awareness at Cigna Education Series. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the outpatient team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. And today I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Gail Dakoff. Gail is a research associate professor at the Center for Treatment Research on Adolescent Drug Abuse at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. She is a scientist, a clinician, and a child and family advocate focusing on substance abuse treatment and prevention. And joining Gail is Leah Mingala. Leah is the director of Hearts of Hope, a nonprofit alcohol and drug prevention intervention advocacy and support organization serving the Chicagoland area. So with that, I will pass it off to Gail and Leah.
Great. Thank you. Today we're going to talk about parents and families and their role in the treatment of adolescent drug abuse. And we want to cover three main areas: what parents need to know, what parents should do now that they know, and a few essential tips for parents who are in the thick of it. And then at the end, as Ann said, there'll be a time for questions. And the way that we're going to work this is that I'll take the lead, and then my partner, Leah, who will introduce herself in a minute, she'll add her perspective as a parent and or clarify whatever I said if she thinks it's not so clear. So, Leah, could you take a few minutes and introduce yourself so the folks know where you're coming from?
Certainly, Doctor. Thank you so much. My name is Leah Mingala. I live in a suburb outside of Chicago, and I'm the mother of a recovering heroin addict. He started using heroin when he was 15, 16 years old. And because of that trauma that happened to our family, I became a drug and alcohol counselor during those years. And he's now 32 and doing very well, thankfully.
Great. All right. So let's just get right to it. So point one, what every parent should know. First of all, one of the most important things to be aware of is that parents and families are essential to teen recovery and to teenagers generally. And we know this definitely because there's a large body of research over 20, 25 years that demonstrates very clearly that the family is the most important developmental context, not only for children, which seems obvious, but also for teenagers. And some of you might have heard Dr. Winter's podcast in this series where he talked about adolescent development and the teen brain. And given the adolescent brain and their social development, it's clear that they can't do it alone. And the research, of course, backs this up, that they need their parents to help them get and stay on a safe and healthy developmental trajectory. So it makes sense that if parents and families are so essential to teen life generally, which they are, and to successful amelioration of addiction and related problems, that adolescent treatments should have, at a minimum, a family focus. Family is important, so adolescent treatments should involve the family. And, of course, I would argue, and we'll talk about it a little later, that the deeper and more comprehensive the family focus, the better. But the first point is that parents and families are essential to teen recovery.
Okay, I'd like to add something.
Sure, please do.
When my son Justin, when I discovered that he was using drugs, I instantly got on the internet and tried to find him some treatment. And I really knew nothing about drugs or alcohol, and I didn't realize the magnitude of heroin other than I knew my kid was failing and I needed to get him help. So I selected one of the top treatment centers in the U.S. and drove him up there and dropped him off, and not one person ever even inquired as to if I was getting help for myself or if I could be part of this process. There was no family therapy that I did in those days, so that we're talking now almost 15 years ago. And since that, he's been to several other inpatient treatment centers, and rarely, if ever, did they ask for parent involvement.
Exactly.
It was almost like, you know, 28 days, you'll come and pick up your kid, he'll be well.
Right. So while it seems obviously like, duh, of course parents are important to teens, it's not as obvious as it may seem. So that's the first point. Parents, families are important to teen development and, of course, recovery and treatment. The next really important point to pay attention to, and this one is a little complicated, but it's that parents are not the problem or the cause of their teen drug use. Parents are not to blame for their teen drug use. It's very, very important that parents realize this. But at the same time, they're essential to recovery. They're an essential part of the solution. So let's talk about this a little bit, because I say it's a little complicated to say you're not to blame, but you are an important ingredient to the medicine. And sometimes when we hear that parents are important, that they are an essential part of recovery, the assumption could be made, a logical link could be made, well, if they're essential to recovery, then they must be at fault. They must be to blame for their teen's drug abuse. Parents must have done something wrong to have their teen in this situation. And, of course, as a parent, it's not unusual to feel responsible for our children's behavior and actions, to feel guilty. A parent will ask herself, what did I do wrong? They may blame their spouse. They may blame their teen. They may blame their genetic history, their teen's friends, neighbors. And I'm here to tell you that this kind of thinking is a waste of time, because you're never going to figure out for sure what it is that caused your teen to get heavily involved in drugs. And although there is research on risk and protective factors, and that's important research, but you can never know for sure if it's true about your teen. And more importantly, it's not necessary to be able to pin this down. What you have to focus on, what parents should focus on instead, is how they're going to help make the situation better. Focus on the problem solving. So we strongly recommend that parents not spend too much time trying to figure out why they are in this situation, and certainly to not blame themselves or feel guilty, and I know that's easier said than done, but it's a waste of time. And time is essential. Your child's life may be in danger. So we strongly suggest that parents try to focus on solving the problem
and
not
wonderful.
On the reasons.
And that is a wonderful thing to reassure parents, because as a parent, it's very natural to completely blame yourself, go back and ask the question over and over again, why, what did I eat something in my pregnancy? Did, you know, as you were saying, doctor, you know, you start blaming yourself, your spouse, and the whole neighborhood for everything, because you're just wanting a why. And as you said, it's so important to just get to the source of how to help.
Exactly. So that's the second important point. The third knowledge thing that you need to know is that not all treatments are equal in their effectiveness. Not all drug abuse, substance abuse treatments for adolescents are equal. There are scientifically proven treatments and there are unproven treatments. And if you ask a parent, what treatment do you want for your child? Do you want a proven treatment or do you want an unproven treatment? I think it's a no-brainer that most of us would say we want the best treatment that science available through science. We want a proven treatment for our child. Now, and 20 years ago, we couldn't say this. There was very little research, and you didn't know if one treatment was better than another or if a certain treatment worked or whatnot, you didn't know. But now we know. Our federal government has spent a lot of money, and now we know that certain treatments work better than others, and this is very, very important. And given this, of course, it makes sense that a parent would rather have a proven treatment than an unproven treatment. And that's the third point. Now, the fourth point that I want to make is that there's also, that kind of goes along with number three, is that there's considerable science to show that family-based treatments are among the most effective and certainly the most long-lasting of the treatments for adolescent drug abuse. And what family-based treatments are more effective than unproven treatments, of course, in reducing drug use and associated problems in the short term, but also in the longer term. And this is, I think, very, very important. And I'd like to just take a minute to talk about our own research in this area, research that's really moved me tremendously. I'm affiliated with an evidence-based treatment called Multidimensional Family Therapy, MDFT for short, and it is a proven substance abuse treatment and a family-based treatment. And we've done studies comparing this treatment to residential substance abuse treatment, which is a powerful treatment, to individual cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a proven treatment but an individual-focused treatment, not family. And what we find when we do these studies, we've done maybe three or four studies of this type, and we find the same thing. We find that when you compare our family-based treatment to other powerful or proven non-family-based treatments, both treatments do well in the short term. That is, while the child's in treatment, perhaps 6 months after treatment, drug use goes down, family conflict is reduced, the child isn't doing illegal things, they're going to school, all these good kinds of things. All these evidence-based treatments are successful, are effective. But where the family-based treatment has the payoff is on the long term. When we do studies and we look out 12 months after treatment, 24 months, we've gone up to 48 months, what you find then is that the teen who's been in the individual treatment, their drug use is going to gradually start to go up to what they were like at intake, or even worse. And the children who received the family-based treatment, their drug use and other problems, they may have go up a little bit over time, but not very much. And mostly they maintain their gains all the way through 48 months. So to us, I mean, and that's what it's all about after, of course, right? Not just while the child is in treatment, but what's going to happen on the longer term. And this is what's really influenced me, that the family-based treatment is so effective. And again, it supports the notion that other research has proven that the family is so vital to teen development, because what these family-based treatments do is they change the family, how the family influences their teen, and that's a more sustainable change than just the change that can happen while you're in treatment. So we find these studies very important, and again, just makes us think more and more about how the family is important and how family-based treatment is really the way to go for adolescent drug abuse. Leah, do you want to say anything? Because I talked a lot there.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you that, you know, when such a thing invades a home like adolescent addiction, I think the first thing we tend to do is just to look at the kid and consider him the problem and that he needs fixing. But it is a family disease, and the entire family, number one, most people don't know how to deal with such a problem if they've never been exposed to it before. So we tend to go in a crisis mode and maybe do all the wrong things unless we're shown a different way. So when my son Justin was put into treatment, and like I said earlier, no one really mentioned anything to me about getting help for myself or family therapy. I went out and sought it myself because I knew I needed it. And when you start working on yourself and working alongside your child, you see dramatic changes occur. It's just amazing. And you, you know, it's sort of like being enlightened, and the light does come on and covers the darkness, because addiction is certainly like a dark place to be.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what have we learned so far? Parents and families are essential to teen development and to recovery. Parents are not the problem, are not to be blamed. Not all treatments are equal in their effectiveness. There are proven treatments and unproven treatments. Family-based treatments are among the most effective and certainly the most long-lasting of the treatments and of evidence-based treatments. And now the fifth point is kind of a sad point, actually, and that is that unfortunately most of the substance abuse treatment that's available in this country, regardless of how expensive it might be, is not the best treatment science has to offer. I mean, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? As I mentioned, there have been tremendous advances. We know what works, what doesn't work, and yet a typical family will not be able to access the best treatment science has to offer. And that's just what it is.
Why is that, Doctor?
I don't know. you know, I don't know. I mean, part of it is it lack of knowledge? Is it they can get away, treatment programs can get away with providing unproven treatments? People will pay for it. You know, I don't really know, but that is the reality.
Well, they are.
You know, as a scientist, yeah, if I may say, you know, as a scientist, we do our science, develop a treatment, test it, make it better, so on and so forth. And for years, the notion was, well, our job is just to do the science, and then it's somebody else's job to advocate that this be available in the community. But it just hasn't happened. Many scientists, myself and many, many others, have done fabulous work and developed wonderful, effective treatments, but yet they're not readily available. So, I mean, more and more we're thinking, scientists, parents, others who care, we need to advocate that our children get the best possible treatment available. But it's not there now. It's not there now, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next section that I want to talk about, so that's sort of the basics, the nut and bolts of what parents really need to know. I mean, you need to know other things, too, but those are the basics. Then the question is, what should parents do now that they know? And it's what Lee has been talking about. Parents, first of all, need to continue to be informed. The more you know, knowledge is power. And the more you know, the more you'll be able to seek out excellent treatment and to demand more access and availability. And, of course, this series of podcasts, that's a wonderful way to learn more about drugs and alcohol. Also, there's tremendous amount of information and services on the Partnership at Drug-Free website, drugfree.org. Lots of information there, and parents need to get informed, be knowledgeable, examine that website and others. And then, you know, I think parents need to be advocates. Parents need to demand that scientifically supported treatments for adolescent drug abuse are more available to them. They need more options in this way. So that's what I think parents need to do now that they know. Be informed, keep yourself informed, and then be advocates. Demand the best treatment for your children, of course.
I would agree wholeheartedly.
Okay. So the third part that I want to talk about is what to do if you are a parent right now searching for treatment or involved in treatment or worried about your teen. I mean, it's fine to be more knowledgeable, and it's fine to go and say, go advocate for better and more effective treatment, but I have a teen and I don't know what to do. So let's talk a little bit about some advice for what you should do right now if you're in this situation. And, of course, the first thing I'm going to say is redundant with what I said before, but I can't say it enough, is use the resources on the Partnership at drugfree.org website. You'll get information, you'll get links to parents like Leah, parent groups, who can help you in your quest, who can provide support, who can give you ideas of where to find support groups, who can also give you ideas about how to find treatment. There is on that website, I think it's called a treatment ebook, which I like very much. And in there it has a series of questions to ask treatment providers prior to making your decision, is this the best treatment program for my child? So there's resources out there and you want to use them. So that's advice number one. Advice number two is get treatment sooner rather than later. When in doubt, do not hesitate, but seek treatment. When I was learning how to drive, I remember my father told me the advice was, when in doubt, don't. And I follow that advice to this day with driving. But with a child who you're worried about, it's the exact opposite advice. When in doubt, do. Act. There's no downside to acting. And I know as parents we doubt ourselves, we second guess. We don't want our kids to be upset with us, whatever it is. But it's very important to push beyond that because you know your family best. You know your child. And if you are worried, then you should act on that. Don't hesitate. Your teen's life may be in danger. And as I said, there's no downside. If you take your child to treatment and it's determined that he really doesn't need treatment or he's not using drugs or whatever it is, well, no harm will come from that. But to delay, then, as we all know, a lot of harm can come from that. So the second thing is get help. Don't hesitate. The third thing that I, little piece of advice I want to give for parents who are in the thick of it, is try to avoid residential treatment if possible, residential treatment for your teen. Now, I realize that residential treatment, short-term or longer-term, may be necessary for some teens, and I'm not against it at all. I refer teens there all the time, and actually I've been working with some folks in the state of Connecticut to develop a family-based residential program, so there is a place for it. But if you get your teen to treatment sooner rather than later, which was the previous point, then residential treatment may not be necessary. And it's a good thing if you don't have to go that way. And the problem with residential treatment is that most residential treatment available in our country is not science-based. Again, most of the residential treatment is unproven. Most of the residential treatments don't include proven treatment models or methods. And they're usually not sufficiently family-based. And, of course, it's very expensive. So it just doesn't make sense to put your child in a very expensive, unproven treatment, right? Why would you do that? So my third piece of advice is try to avoid residential. Now, I know there are parents out there who haven't acted fast enough, and things are out of control, and they're worried about their child's safety. Well, then again, don't hesitate. That goes to point two, when in doubt, act. If you're worried that your child is in danger being in the community, then go. Put him in residential treatment today. I think you get the point. But if you can avoid it, that would be great. And look for other alternatives. Get your child in other alternatives first. That's why acting fast makes a difference. That would be great. The fourth point that I want to make, this is a collection of points. They're just advice to parents who are in the middle of it, not really so a consistent group in some sense. But you'll forgive me for that, I'm sure. The fourth most important thing is that I think parents need to realize that there is no such thing as tough love. And we know that the tough love approach to treatment, and there are many individual therapists and treatment programs that adopt this approach doesn't work for teenagers. I always like to say tough love is an oxymoron. Love is not tough. So providers and programs that advise parents to implement tough love strategies should be avoided. I'd run from them. So, and this, how does this play itself out? You might get advice that says you should change the locks on your house so that when your teen or young adult comes home, they won't be able to get into the house. You should kick him out of the house. You should threaten to kick him out of the house. These very harsh things. And what we know is these so-called solutions will make matters worse. Your child who's using drugs, if you lock him out of the house, He's not going to say, oh, mom locked me out of the house. I want to stay in my warm bed, so I'm going to stop using drugs. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. It just makes the child angry at the parent and unloved and not understood. So you should really stay away from anybody who advises you to take this approach, because it will only harden the heart of the teen and young adult and push them away from the family, which is the exact opposite of what we want. You want to bring your child closer into the family and into you so you can influence them. And I know Leah probably has a lot to say about this.
Yes, I do, and I got that advice constantly about tough love, changing the locks, throwing them out, letting him find his own treatment. If he's really ready for treatment, he'll pick up the phone, even though he's homeless, out on the street, walking around, find a way to get help himself. Now, even back then, when my son was sick, that never sat right with me in my heart, and yet I wanted to do exactly what I was told, because I really was fighting for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I never could change my locks. And I'm the one that made the phone calls to get treatment, because my son was so sick in his disease that there was no way he could even think of picking up a phone or making calls on his own behalf. So I came to loathe that term, tough love.
Yeah.
And then I felt like kind of like a loser mom, because I wasn't falling into it. And then, of course, you get labeled as codependent and enabling when you're actually trying to support your child in recovery. So, yeah, I'm so against that myself.
Yeah,
they need our help and our love, not condemnation.
Yeah, and that must have been a terrible time for you, because you knew in your heart what's the right thing, but then you have professionals who supposedly know better telling you the opposite. It's just torture for a parent.
And, you know, I really feel in my gut to this day that had I done that, my son would not be alive.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure you're right. And I really like also what you talked about, this idea of ready for treatment. Programs that take the point of view of, you know, you have to be ready for treatment. That's also a ridiculous concept with teenagers, and maybe with adults too, but also with teenagers, certainly. A good treatment, no one's going to, you could die before you're ready for treatment, right? That's the point, you know, and so that doesn't make sense. And a good treatment program, part of their job is to help make the child ready for treatment and the family. Part of an important part of every evidence-based treatment is motivation, to motivate them, to get them ready. We don't expect them to be ready when they come to us. Our job as a treatment provider is to help get them ready. So, again, when you hear this tough love, when you hear not ready for treatment, that's always a red flag to me to walk away and get away from that program and find something else. Just absolutely. And then my last, And then my last point, and then we can open it up for questions, it is very important, and it links back to what we talked about earlier, the idea of parents are not to blame for the problem, but they are an important part of the medicine. And we'll take a little time with this. And so while we're not to blame, as we've been saying over and over, it is true that we have to do some things differently in order to help our teens get and stay off drugs and have a productive life. So parents aren't to blame, but they're the medicine, which means we've got to do things differently. We're not, as parents, totally off the hook here. And we suggest that as parents, we look at how we try to influence our kids. And you need to ask yourselves whether or not what you're doing works. Are we getting what we want? We want our child to not use drugs. We want them to come home on time. We don't want them to do illegal things. We want to have a decent relationship with them. We want them to go to school. We want them to have a future. We want them to have a good attitude. So, and we do various things to try to influence them in that way. And the question is, And some of the things are reasonable things that may work for one child but not for another. Some of them maybe aren't so reasonable. Maybe they're not developmentally appropriate for adolescent, whatever. The point is that as parents, we need to look at what we're doing and ask ourselves, is it working or is it not working? Am I getting what I want from my child? And if you're not getting what you want from your child, then you want to look and consider alternatives. We need to look at ourselves, you know, admit that we're not perfect, that we make mistakes too, that perhaps we can do things better, and stop doing what doesn't work, and then experiment with other strategies to influence our kids. So the point is, we're not to blame, but we're part of the medicine, and being part of the medicine means we're going to have to look at ourselves as parents, as human beings, and do things differently. Stop doing some of what we're doing that doesn't work. Try different ways of influencing our teen. And, of course, you can think of this on your own, but certainly, you know, you need to be in therapy, in a program, to help you sort through it. It's very hard to see, be objective in your own family. So that's why it's tremendously useful to have a skilled clinician help you go through what you do, what works, what doesn't work, help you come up with alternative ways of influencing your child, ways to improve your relationship with your child and whatnot. But it's very, very important. And one problem, like Leo was saying, about some of the programs and some of the residential programs is they think parents are the problem, or they don't think parents are the solution, and they don't involve the parents. And sometimes, frankly, parents like this too, because then they're off the hook. Oh, it's just this horrible disease. I'll bring my child to a program. They'll fix whatever is inside his heart and mind, and then he'll come back to me, and life will go on. But the parent in that situation, they're not forced to look at themselves, and they're not forced to make any changes. And, of course, this is one reason why we think the residential treatments don't work, because the kid may have changed while he's in the facility, but the parent hasn't changed. And now the child comes home, and nothing is different. And that's what we mean by the parent is the medicine. Not the only solution. Of course, the kid has to change. Lots of things have to change. But the parent also has to change some of what they do. And it's different from parent to parent, what you need to change. Some of us have to change a lot. Some of us have to change a little. But we have to be willing to look at ourselves and make some changes if we want to really be the medicine for our kid and have, you know, sustained recovery for them and a good life for us and them too. Do you have anything to say about that, Leah?
No, other than I would 100% agree with you on that. And, you know, that's where the change occurred in my family when I started to get therapy and help. You know, this is such an insidious situation, and you need as much help as you possibly can get to get your family healthy again. And it's like, you know, the family's all hurting, and healing needs to occur, not just for the presented addict, but for everybody in the family. And then you see real positives come out because of
right.
That. Yes, I would
absolutely
totally agree.
Because all of us in that situation, I don't think there'd be a parent in that situation who hasn't said and done things that they regret. And you want to be able to talk to your child and repair the relationship. That's just one area. But it's very, very important that parents, I think, and I know, Leah, you know from your experience, too, that we look at ourselves and be willing to also change some of what we do, not just demand that or support that our teen change.
Yeah, and even if the family seemed to be pretty normal and healthy in the beginning, and some aren't, but, I mean, let's say that they are, when this comes into the family, it's sort of like a big hurricane hits, and so you go into this mode of, you know, survival mode where you're being hypervigilant, and so you're in a crisis, you tend not to make always the best decisions.
Absolutely.
So you have to relearn how to do that again. And
yeah.
You do say and do things that you wished and you hadn't and you regret, and, you know, it breaks your heart. And so absolutely repair needs to happen within the family.
Yeah.
You've got to learn how to do that.
Absolutely, right. And it's not easy, of course, but we just must. We must, or else we won't have what we ultimately want.
No. And yet the good news about all this is when that healing takes place, you have a family that is stronger, more honest, more solid than ever before. When you
yeah.
go through all this.
Yeah, that's the truth. That is the truth. Okay, I think we are done.
We can pause for our survey and then get an answer.
Exactly, and questions. So that's great. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity to ask your questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please tell us the degree to which you agree or disagree with the following statements. For our first question, this session provided me with information on the role of parents and family members in the diagnosis and treatment of drug and alcohol problems. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. For our second question, this session educated me on strategies to use if my child is using alcohol or other drugs. Again, star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. For our third question, overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following. Again, star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. For our fourth question, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree and star 2 if you do not agree. And our final question, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with substance abuse issues. Star 1, if I am the parent of a child with substance abuse issues. Star 2, if I'm a family member of someone with substance abuse issues. Star 3, if you are an employee of Cigna. And star 4, if other. And we thank you all for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you would like any additional comments to help us improve this program or have questions at this time, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. A voice prompt on your phone line will request that you record your name for the Q&A session. Please record your name clearly so that we may identify your line and pose your question. Again, that is star 1 for questions. We'll pause for a moment. And once again, for questions, that is star 1. And we'll go first to Molly Augustine.
Hi, I have two questions, one of which, could you repeat the name of the website that the doctor was recommending?
That would be www.drugfree.org. And we also have something we forgot to mention, and that is a helpline that is also from the partnership at drugfree.org. And that number is 1-855-DRUG-FREE or 855-378-4373. And it's a helpline for parents. It's very useful. I would recommend it highly.
Okay. And then for those of us that are employees of Cigna, will there be CEUs for this presentation?
No, at this time we're not able to offer CEUs.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We'll go next to Pez.
Hi, what is your suggestion for a teenager who refuses to see a counselor?
Who refuses to see a counselor?
Yes.
Yeah, again, then the parent should go to the counselor and work with the counselor. The first step then is what we're going to do, put our heads together to figure out how we can get this child to talk to me. I mean, a good therapist will, I know this is not everybody does this, but will go to the home, meet the child where he's at the house, and will reach out in a way that the child will feel comfortable. So, and if you are with a counselor and they aren't coming up with creative ways to get your child to be willing at least to start to meet with them, then my advice is go find somebody who can do that. But that's the job of the counselor. Many, many teenagers are not, you know, most teenagers don't say, Mom, you know, I want to go to therapy. You know, it's usually the situation is they don't want treatment. And so it takes some skill. Some parents can force their kids, can influence their kids enough to go, but if the teen still refuses, and many do, then it's up to the therapist to use their skill to engage the child to in treatment.
And that's the part that is so important, too, is finding that therapist or counselor that your child can relate to and engage
mm-hmm.
with. And it is the responsibility of the therapist or counselor to do that.
Okay. We'll hear next from Tina.
Hi, I work here in the Eden Prairie office at Cigna. I'm wondering if the drugfree.org website is a Cigna-approved website, first of all. Is it something we can refer our customers to?
Yes.
Okay. And then second of all, I do have some parents on occasion will ask for a non-12-step program. Are there any in particular that you recommend for those families?
Well, a lot of the programs, maybe all of the programs that I'm talking about when I say evidence-based proven programs are non-12-step. Now, I'm not against 12-step, and there has been some research on 12-step programs, and they can be very effective and so on and so forth. But most of those programs are not 12-step programs. So there's cognitive behavior therapy, if it's well done. Individual cognitive behavior therapy is not 12-step. The program that I work in, multidimensional family therapy, multi-systemic family therapy. I mean, there are various programs, science-based, that are not 12-step. And one, there is another website, let's see, that could help you find programs. And this is sponsored by the federal government.
Okay.
I mean, it's a difficult situation. I wish I had these easy answers, and that's why this whole thing about accessibility and availability is important. But you might want to go to, I'm looking it up, it's an NREP. If you do, it's the National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs and Practices. If you just Google NREP, N-R-E-P-P, And it's not just substance abuse, it's all kinds of treatments, but adolescent substance abuse treatments are in there too, and they review various programs and give them ratings about the degree of which they are scientifically based in that, and they describe the program. So that would be the first place I would go to look for evidence-based but non-12-step, as well as 12-step programs.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go next to Scott.
Hi there. I want to expand upon the statements about tough love and so forth, and I hear what you're saying. I think, however, parents out there need some sort of guidance when it comes to, you know, and I've gone through this myself, and you know, we unfortunately came up short with our son, but. You know, the tough love situation in the sense that, you know, while we're trying to find a counselor, while we're trying to find some answers, while we're trying to get some treatment, we still have somebody who is, you know, stealing from the house, not, you know, upholding the rules of the family, and, you know, there has to be some sort of, and I guess probably the best way to put it is there are consequences to their actions. And, you know, the locking the doors or what have you, there has to be, you know, we can't just leave the doors open and let them come in and take stuff to go buy drugs. So I hope that you understand my question, that there has got to be some sort of, you know, I understand your statement about the tough love and that it usually does backfire, and I can, to some extent, agree with you. But there is a point where the parents somehow have to protect themselves and their family and the rest of the family from the abuse that is going on from the person that is using and taking from the family and hurting the family.
Right. I mean, and that's, but, you know, the thing is, as you yourself say, I mean, it's not moralistic, this, my notion about tough love. It's just that it doesn't work. And I understand why parents might go that way. And I understand, you know, you're desperate. You don't know what to do. It's an awful situation. Yes, and you do the best you can. Look, you do your best you can in a very difficult situation. What I'm suggesting is, as a strategy, it's just not going to work, and what you've got to do is, you know, get in a situation, is get help as soon as possible, because you can't do it yourself. You need somebody in there helping you figure out what to do to control the situation right now and to get your kid and your family on a better road. I mean, that's the main thing. We can't do this by ourselves. Even I couldn't do it. A trained professional, I couldn't do it. So you do the best you can. You make a lot of mistakes, right? Parents do, you know, and that's the way it is. But you want, in that situation, you want to seek help right away. And, you know, you don't want to do things that don't work. I mean, that's why I always tell parents, ask yourself, is this working? So, you know, locking them out of the house, is it working? Is it changing his behavior? Are you more willing to talk to him and convince him to go to treatment? You know, it's usually the case is not. The other thing that parents do a lot of, now I'm a parent, I do it too, give advice, lecture and give good advice, which is usually good advice, but it typically goes in one ear and out the other. So the question I say to parents is, well, why keep doing it if it's not working, if he's not listening, if it's not changing his behavior? Maybe stop and do something else. So that's the main thing. Of course, you know, you're in situations, these are very, very difficult.
And you do have to protect the other children in the house.
Of course. You got to do what you got to do.
Thank you.
And our next question, the caller that did not record their name, your line is now open for your question. I'm hearing no response. We'll move on to Sandra.
Oh. My question was basically like Scott's. What do you do when your child begins to engage in criminal behavior, not only in your home, but perhaps in friends' homes as well? I mean, at some point, you're going to have to involve law enforcement and saying, not locking them out. I don't know. I don't think that works. It's not.
No, but yeah, I'm telling you, the tough approach, it doesn't work. Locking them out, calling the police on your child, I mean, those are acts of desperation. And there are alternatives to that, absolutely, that will more likely work. And
what
of course,
are some of those alternatives?
Well, you need, you know, the thing is, I can give you ideas now, but every family, every situation is different. So I'm loath to do that. This is why I'm saying you've got to sit down with a professional who can help walk you through it and work with your teen and work with you, the two of you together, to help him get on a better road. And
well, I have
again,
sat down with several professionals.
Yeah.
And every time criminal behavior comes up, each professional has felt. You know, that goes from psychiatrists to therapists to psychologists to physicians to whomever, that it was best to involve law enforcement.
Ooh, no. But these are not evidence-based treatments. These are not proven treatments. The proven treatments, they won't say that. Except, you know, they just won't say that.
Okay, so what's
I'd like to respond to that.
To criminal behavior?
Well, could I respond to that? Because I've done it all. I've called the police on my son several times because I was told to do that. And I'm not going to regret that decision because at that point in time, my son was so out of control, and he was not only a danger to himself but to others. And when he was put in jail, at least he was safe from dying. So I felt like, okay, that's great. Now, later on, it kind of bit me in the rear end because, you know, he's got these felonies that were imposed by me that still haunt him to this day. But at the time, I think it, you know, helps save him from himself. So we can't really blame ourselves for doing those things. And sometimes when they're completely out of control like that, you know, you have to look at the priorities, you know. Because someone say that's taking heroin, you know, they're a shot away from death every time they use. So sometimes you have to take very desperate measures. So jail is better than being on the streets and using, although I think it's probably the last resort. And I agree with Dr. Dacoff that you try to, you know, get them actual positive evidence-based treatment if you can, but sometimes it's not available at your fingertips.
And our next caller, again, if you didn't record your name, your line is open for your question. Hearing no response, we'll move to Tom.
Dr. Dacoff, there are parents who are confused about whether or not drug-assisted treatment should be part of an adolescence program. Many parents believe that substituting one drug for another is just not a viable option. Do you have a point of view about that in evidence-based practices?
Yeah, I don't have a point of view one way or the other. We're not closed to it, and in some, it's often not necessary. And with all these kind of more extreme things, if it's residential treatment, if it's drug-assisted treatment, you know, you try other alternatives first. We always talk about least restrictive treatments are better than more restrictive. But in certain situations, drug-assisted treatment is a viable option, is going to be the best thing. So it's really a case-by-case decision.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Dustin.
Thanks for taking my call. I have just more so a comment than a question. a lot of times there's the question of, was this genetically passed on? And you spoke about parents beating themselves up with sociological or psychological issues. Did I do something to Jimmy and now he's doing this? But Stanton Sam now is a psychiatrist, I think psychiatrist, and he writes about it, really emphasizes the individual's choice. So as I work with individuals as a behavioral care manager, I certainly connect them with these resources, and this has been really helpful, by the way. That's something I also want to provide to the parents as well, that you can do all the good things possible, but still this is an individual who makes their own choice. And in terms of the development of the frontal cortex, that's a whole other issue in terms of decision-making of teenagers. So I just wanted to add that piece in and get your thoughts, ma'am.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because, right, when we say, oh, the family and parents are important, sometimes people can think we're saying that's all that's important, that's the whole thing, and it's not, of course. The parents are one piece of the puzzle. Certainly the child and his mind is his heart and his life, he's a part of it too. The peers are a part of it, the social system, the school, you know, the relationship between the parents and the kids. So they're all a piece of the puzzle. No one, it's not just as family therapists we say, oh, we don't like these individual approaches because they say it's all within the child. Well, a family approach that says it's all within the family, I think that's mistaken too. And it takes all of us, the therapist, the parent, the family, the child, working together and all of us changing to, you know, get the kid on a really good road. So absolutely, it's not just the parents. And everyone has situations where parents do great work, they change tremendously, the family is much better, the teen and the parents have a better relationship, they can solve their problems, and still the kid goes off the deep end. You know, these things, they don't happen so much with a good evidence-based family therapy, but they, you know, they do happen because the world is complicated and mysterious, and it's not just the family who has to change, but the children too. So that's really important that you bring that up. I appreciate that.
And again, our next question, caller, if you did not record your name, your line is open for your question. And hearing no response, we don't have any further questions at this time.
All right. Well, thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Gail and Leah, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you do have specific questions about topics discussed today, please you can go ahead and contact the Drug and Alcohol Specific Team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. And please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Drug and Alcohol Awareness Seminar next month on February 15th at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, when we will be discussing diagnosing and treating co-occurring mental health and substance abuse disorders.
Okay, thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity. I really appreciate it.
I do too. Thank you. It was fun.
And that will conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining us.